The Sound of the Russian Soul. Sergei Rachmaninoff and Dmitri Shostakovich, two very different voices of that Russian soul, one romantic and heroic, one full of turmoil and conflict. These musical voices reflect the real ambiguities in the Russian identity even today. Take geography. What has been understood historically as the territory of Russia, in a very real sense, is not Russian at all. Most of the landmass is actually Siberia to the east, an amalgam of tribes and ethnicities reshuffled and variously exterminated down through the centuries. In the West, Russia is an amalgam of European, Turkic identities and the peoples of the Caucasus and Baltics. Ukraine lies at the very center of this swirl of cultures, even though its name means on the edge. Russians have traditionally called it Malorussia, Little Russia. Russia's national identity condensed out of the European turmoil that exploded from the French Revolution in the late 1700s. But Russia was late to find its national identity and, in a sense, is still looking for it. In many ways, the voice that may speak loudest about this search for identity on the part of both Russia and Ukraine is not protesters or the government. It is the literary voice of Russia. Anne Lounsbury, chair of Russian and Slavic Studies at New York University, joins us. Welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
What do we learn? What do we hear in voices of Nikolai Gogol, for instance, who coined the phrase Russian soul, and Dostoevsky and Tolstoy, when we think about these different identities of Ukraine and Russia?
I think that what we learn from looking at Gogol, and I think he is the place we would look to think about this question, is we learn about the uncomfortable hybridity of Russian identity and Ukrainian identity as well. And it's something that's not so easy to acknowledge, particularly once romantic nationalism kicks in the 19th century. But in fact, Russian national identity has been and arguably still is largely an imperial identity. One scholar of Russian history, Jeffrey Hosking, said that Britain had an empire. Russia is an empire.
Hmm. And when we think about Gogol, he is a Ukrainian by birth, even though In Dead Souls, his most famous book, is a parody, an extraordinary parody of the characters inside Russia at all levels of class and bureaucracy and villages, cities. In a way, he's a detached looker at Russia, almost as a satirist.
Yes, exactly. And some people attribute his satiric gaze to his Ukrainian origins. And in fact, when he first began publishing in the 1830s, some reviewers thought that his sort of caustic take on Russia had to do with his Ukrainian origins. He was born in Ukraine in Poltava. His home language was Ukrainian. His last name actually was not just Gogol, it was Gogol Yanovsky, which Yanovsky is a Polish surname, and that points to the family's, you know, further mixed origins.
And the fact that the Polish Empire ruled Ukraine for much of the, I guess, 13th and 14th centuries.
Exactly, exactly. And but Gogol did what many educated elites did at that time, and that is, without in any way disavowing his Ukrainianness, he identified with the imperial center, with high Russian culture that was located in Petersburg, in order to make a career. In his case, it was a literary career, and he went to Petersburg and promptly made it big. It was a literary career in his case, but this is what Ukrainian elites often did in many spheres. So you ended up with an educated stratum of the populace who truly did have mixed identity. And it's not that they had betrayed their, you know, sacred origins in some way. It's that they were making it in the world.
What about Dostoevsky and Tolstoy? Do they view Ukraine as part of Russia? Do they have a notion of a greater Russian identity in their literature?
Dostoevsky was a Russian nationalist, and he certainly would have seen Ukrainians as a subset of Russians, which was a fairly typical way for Russian nationalists by the second half of the 19th century to see Ukrainians. Tolstoy, it was probably more complicated because Tolstoy was in no way identified with the Russian state or with the Russian Empire, and he tended to see things more in local terms. I think with his essentially anthropological gaze, Tolstoy would have seen Ukrainians as their own thing. But he didn't pay much attention to Ukrainians.
What about the indigenous Ukrainian poets, the voices like Ivan Franko and people who are revered by Ukrainians but not really well known anywhere else?
Yes. I mean, one thing I should make clear is that I am a scholar of Russian literature. And so the voice that you're hearing is the voice of someone who's interested in people who write in Russian about Ukraine. If you had a scholar of Ukrainian literature here, you would get a different story. And one of the things you would hear would be the way that Russian imperial power tried to restrict the use of Ukrainian language, certainly in print, tried to confine it essentially to being a kind of peasant folk language. And it was in the early decades of the 19th century that the language was in effect reclaimed and shaped as a modern literary language by people like Shevchenko. Gogol, again, is the flashpoint. He's sort of the battleground. So you get ongoing fights even today between sort of the Russian side and the Ukrainian side about who owns Gogol. You spell his name differently depending on which side you're on. You say his name differently. And you see him on both sides as a patriot, but for a different entity.
And yet when Khrushchev in the 50s declared that Crimea was a part of Ukraine and
yes,
not a part of Russia, it was seen then in the Soviet context as just a technicality. This is like a
yes,
completely settled issue. Now it's exploded again.
Yes.
Why?
I think that it's somewhat difficult to answer that question through the lens of classic Russian literature, but I would say that what happened is an identity that was sort of comfortably hybrid at certain points is not allowed to be comfortably hybrid at other points. What Ukraine actually is a mixed country, people speaking different languages and sort of identifying with different political entities. And this is a moment when that is not acceptable. And I think that you have people on both sides, the same groups of people who fought over Gogol are still there sort of duking it out about what their identity is.
A melting pot on a boil.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I think it's another one of those sort of Central and Southern European places that probably shouldn't be understood strictly in terms of European Romantic nationalism.
Anne Lounsbery is chair of Russian and Slavic Studies at New York University. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.